Well, I'm sorry that I'm going to give the listener another story about God and his preparation of me and my lady for what lies ahead. Some of you may be anxious to get into the amazing technologies, and we most certainly will do that, but I just want to you to understand that following God is oftentimes the prerequisite for an amazing journey. And what you're going through just might be relative to what you're about to go through. God's really miracle-filled walks are not for the weak. You have to be toughened up for some of these journeys. So I'm just going to get you a little bit prepared. That's it. This is my last story about me and God and getting prepared. Then we're going to get into, start getting to the technology on the next one. And we're going to go through technologies, buzz through one heck of a lot of technologies before we're done. Anyway, if we come back to the story of what was happening with me and Allison, we had this situation where we were in Israel and beautiful things had happened. We came back kind of like expecting to just jump right into some big miraculous thing that was going to give us tons of money and we're going to go save the world and change everything that everybody was doing based upon these prophecies that we had gotten. And one of the things that we came back to find was that article about Pat Robertson and me, which is one of the podcasts here, I think podcast two or three. And in reading that article, I called and talked to Alvin Weichel. He was mentioned in that article after we read that news article about Pat Robertson, because he had put his life savings into UCS, United Community Services, which I usually would have tried to talk him out of, but his investment actually saved the company when I first was going to go out and try to find something I could do with the company with the delivering the goods to the venture capitalist that had told me that when I got all of that done, he was there with the checkbook and we'd be partners. So you've had that story already anyway. But so I definitely let him do that, and I knew that he was putting in his life savings, but I really felt like everything was going to be okay. I thought I was going to go down to Wall Street and pick up all kinds of money. So anyway, I felt bad about that when I read that article. I felt like I should try to get his investment back for him. I mean, I'm coming back. I'm going to be doing well. Why don't I try to touch base with Alvin and see if I can help him? He was a retired chef whose wife was still waiting tables to keep him and her going. We had the equipment to do the foam insulation and a great product, the foam insulation made by Siba Geigy, and maybe we could get him something back. That was my thinking. He was a very nice guy, and he appreciated the gesture. And I did go see him. He knew I could sell, and he liked the product that we were doing when I told him about the foam insulation and Siba Geigy, and I thought I could make some money with that, and if I could, I would like to try to get him back to square one or do whatever I could do. Or actually, no, originally I was just talking to him about, hey, I've got the technology, I've got the equipment. I don't know what you can get back from selling the equipment and some of the bags of product that I've got, but you're welcome to it, was basically what I went to him to do. So anyway, he asked me if I could use it to make all of his money back. Like, instead of him just getting a part of it, selling that equipment, if it's good and you believe in it, and I know you're a salesman, could you use it to get all my money back? So I agreed to try. And so I gave him the equipment. It was his company and his equipment. He wanted to set me up then. He had a few bucks that he could do that with. And so there was a company that he set up, and I was just selling for the company that he set up. I was in Red Bank, New Jersey. So he came down to Red Bank, New Jersey, with me, and I showed him around, showed him what we're doing, and he went out and picked out a place for us to set it up in. And I said, okay, I'll work for you, and you get all the money, and we'll see if we can't get you all your money back. He lived in Bergen County, which is way up in the north of New Jersey, and I lived in the southern part of New Jersey, so I set up an office in Red Bank for him, his office, he rented it, and I sold a lot of insulation products and projects, and I just ran all those projects and used the equipment to get them done. And I paid the employees, and I paid the bills in his checking account, because I would collect the money and put it in his checking account and pay the bills out of his checking account to keep him from having to drive all the way back down to Red Bank to do payroll every Friday. And so I just would write out the checks from his account with his permission. And so I was writing his name to the checks. Well, I mean, we were friends, and I thought we were doing something good for each other. So anyway, I had a bunch of jobs underway and had about 70% of his money recovered with jobs completed and nearing completion. I mean, we had jobs that were almost done, some jobs that were all done. And, of course, I hadn't gone to pick up the checks. I was going to have Alvin go pick up the checks, and whenever he got all of his money back, you know, I'll just take over the company. That was the idea. Then that guy that I mentioned in the podcast with Pat Robertson, Jim Scannapico, got with Alvin Weichel and talked him into putting a charge in against me for forgery. People. And walking away from his own company, which this man actually did. I don't know what Jim had told him, but Jim evidently was good at talking about me. So anyway, he walked away from his own company. Well, it went to a grand jury, and the grand jury threw the charge of forgery out against me, and that article had forgery. When they saw three processed checks written to him that he had actually cashed himself. So here's a guy that is charging me with forgery because I'm writing his name to checks. All of the checks were for his company. And I'm forging his name supposedly, but he had three of the checks written to him and he cashed them. So the grand jury said, no, we don't think that was forgery. Anyway, he supposedly didn't know that I was writing those checks without his permission. So supposedly forging his name without his permission, three of which were cashed by him. So the grand jury threw the dumb thing out of court. I don't know if he ever picked up the checks from the customers that I had finished, because I just took the equipment, said the heck with the deal then, and backed out and left. So that was my illustrious program with trying to get Alvin Weichel back his money, which I did get him a large amount of his money back. And I am happy about that. But that Jim just kind of screwed everything with everybody, and he actually talked this guy into hurting himself. Didn't really hurt me. I mean, they tried to hurt me, but it didn't really hurt me. Anyway, an investor gave me money to set up the foam company with my concept of doing the job and a down payment to cover the costs and taking the rest in payments. I found a company that did big commercial foam insulation jobs in Delaware that wanted to sell his company. So I was kind of working with another guy to get this thing up and going, and I provided the equipment, and he provided the, you know, the business. And I then was always looking for something that I could do on my own, but I was making this other guy money working with him, and I had the equipment and everything. So anyway, I found this guy in Delaware that wanted to sell his company. It was a guy advertising in Delaware in the foam insulation business, and he wanted to sell his company. I called him, and to make a long story short, I went to talk to him, and he loved my sales concept of the way I was doing this. And so he offered me that I could buy his company for nothing down and pay him over time from the sales I could produce with his equipment and his reputation and his business that was already up and established in the business in Delaware. He just liked the way I did business, and he liked what I was able to do. And so he wanted me to go do it for him, and he wanted to get out of the business, so he wanted me to just take over his business and use his trucks and his equipment and go make it happen and buy it with nothing down. He just wanted out, and he believed that I could make it happen. So anyway, he had a warehouse and lots of equipment, reputation, and existing commercial customers, because that foam insulation in regular construction was the only way you could get R30 in walls, and Delaware was making it mandatory to have R30 in walls. So R30 is just the value of insulation. Usually those walls would only have R16 in them, and the only way you could really meet the code. So here you got a place that has a code that says that what you got is the only way to do it, and this guy's already set up in the business with a reputation. I think he was 10, 15 years in the business. So that was great. I mean, that was exciting. So I was very excited. I came home ready to go back to Delaware, and God had given me a super opportunity, and I was finally going to be set up myself in the energy business, as had been predicted by everything and everybody. I'm like, here it is. This is it. I'm ready to go. My wife had just had her first baby 2 weeks earlier. When we were married, I had to promise my wife that we would not have children. Her mother had really scared her about how painful the process was, and she did not want to experience it. Now, here she was. She was pregnant. So out of all of this, here she is pregnant and scared to death. So we prayed and prayed and prayed for God to protect her from unbearable pain in childbirth. We were living in a house with a wonderful Christian lady who was divorced, who had no other place to live, and she liked having a man in the house for protection, evidently. So our first baby was a miracle child. And I do mean miracle child. It was prophesied that we would have a son and then two girls. And I was going to deliver our own baby at home, which made the Christian lady a little nervous, but I was a medic in the Army, had delivered two or three children on my own. I had delivered on my own. But there were complications. That first birth was a placenta previa, if you know what that is. And I took Allison, my wife, to the hospital in Princeton, because, you know, she was bleeding pretty badly, and we were thinking, well, there's complications here, we should just go to the hospital. We had no insurance, But when they saw that even though she had no pain at all, she was fully dilated, they got her into the birthing room right away, and she pretty much slept through the natural birth of our first baby. I mean, slept through it. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding you. No pain. That was a miracle in itself and a tremendous answer to a lot of prayer. She ended up having all three babies the same way. I hate to say this, but painless. So any lady listening to me right now, it's nothing to do with anybody else or anything else. This is just a miracle from God. All three painless births. They never think that my wife is ready to have a baby until they examine her, because she's not acting like somebody having a baby. She doesn't. So three kids and no pain in childbirth, that's a tremendous gift from God to my precious girl. So here we were in a Christian lady's house for only a few weeks more, then we were going to be leaving and moving to Delaware. We were going to Delaware by bus, because I didn't have a car or anything, to take over an energy business. And, you know, he had plenty of vehicles in that business, and I was going to be taking the whole thing over. So we had very little money and no car, but we could get a salary when we got to Delaware. And after I helped my baby, who we had named Jonathan originally, because we were so impressed with Saul's son, Jonathan and David. So we thought, wow, Jonathan, David, that'd be pretty great. Until we discovered that it was a girl. So there, we had a girl. We were shocked. We were like, wait a minute. That's the boy, Jonathan. So we had to change the name. And I woke up the next day after holding my baby, paralyzed. Yeah, paralyzed. I had a rare form of polio. Somehow I'd contracted a rare form of polio. It starts in the fingers and the toes. They get paralyzed first. Then it goes to the hands and the feet, so it's going from the outside in. Then they get paralyzed, then the legs and the arms, and it just keeps going inward into your body, just shutting things down. If it stops before it hits the vital organs and cranial nerves, you live. If not, you're either going to die or you have to be in a hospital so they can run your heart and lungs on these machines in order to keep you alive, because your heart and lungs would be paralyzed. It wouldn't work so well. They can maneuver them, I guess, from these machines, at least for a while, and just hope that it eventually goes away. But usually people who get to that level die. Being broke, we had no money, and I was a vet, so being a broke vet, they sent me to the VA hospital in Orange, New Jersey. My poor wife was alone with a new baby and very little money and no job and a place to live for a little bit, for a while I was unable to buy the Delaware business because I was totally paralyzed from the neck down. It came on in, and it did the whole job. I was completely paralyzed from the neck down. My paralysis was the worst-case scenario. Here we are, not all that long back from Israel, where these miraculous things happen, and God told me to go home because we already had our investor, and it was UCSA, the company Pat Robertson had started, was to be my investor. It's it's on the verge of bankruptcy, it's going to be my investor. Well, I mean, he gave us a miracle to show that that was real when Bobby asked for a miracle and the cloud formed and just came there across the sky and just came over Mount Moses, where we were on top of Mount Moses on a rock, storming heaven. So, I mean, you heard that story in the last podcast. So in faith, we go home from that wonderful experience, and he's going to do something marvelous to make that happen. And here I am a year later, paralyzed. Honestly, I honestly believe that was part of God's plan. And I do know that paralysis was good for me. It taught me patience, and it really instilled in me faith in God. Anyway, I'm going to tell you the story of this paralysis. Now I'm paralyzed from the neck down. I have to be hospitalized because it hit my cranial nerves. And that's what happens. It just keeps coming in from your extremities all the way in and hits your cranial nerves. And when it hits your cranial nerves, you got a real problem, because those nerves tell my heart to beat and tell my lungs to breathe. And it no longer functions if it's not being told to beat and told to breathe in autonomic functions. So I had, it actually did collapse these cranial nerves, and I had double vision, dysplasia, and no signal was going to my heart, and no signal was going to my lungs, and that was supposed to mean that I'm on a lung machine and something massaging my heart and keeping it pumping in major surgery, but I'm not in any of that because somehow my heart was still pumping and my lungs were still breathing. They were both still functioning. They put hundreds of pins and needles into my body with electric impulses shooting everywhere. And there was something weird going on. I never had to be hooked up to a machine to make my heart or lungs function. They functioned anyway. Of course, I know why, but the doctors didn't know. The disease takes your extremities and paralyzes them from the furthest out to all the way into from your toes, feet, and legs into your heart and lungs. If it stops before vital organs, you'll recover. If not, it ends in death usually. Anyway, I took this as a message from God. I was in a VA hospital. It's all I had. I had no money, had no insurance, and that was not good. I may later do a detailed talk on this experience. I actually got better, so I was able to use utensils in a very crude manner, and I wanted to go back to where we lived with the Christian lady, and the doctor allowed me to go home because I was doing so well for Christmas to be with my wife and baby. I was part of a new research project to try out high doses of steroids to fix this French polio, this thing called Guillain-Barré epidemic, and it was epidemic. They gave me 500 cc's of steroids IV daily. I mean, that, if you understand that, that would shock you. 500 cc's of steroids daily. Boy, that's amazing. It takes about 6 months to slowly reduce the dosage to get off of that level of steroids. So you got to go from 500 cc's slowly down over 6 months, just dropping it ever so slightly in order to get off of that. You can do them with pills. You don't have to have the liquid. So you can do it with pills also. So you can come down off of it with pills or liquid. Well, I had an IV, and the easiest way to administer it was IV. The doctor sent me home and forgot to give me my steroids medication to allow me to withdraw. So he sends me home, no meds, don't have any steroids. I was several hours away from the VA hospital where my wife was, and I had no steroids, and I started feeling weird. I felt like shooting electric impulses running through my body, like I had grabbed I had my feet in water, and I had just grabbed a wall outlet. I had been getting better, but I could not do anything after that. Again, I was just, once again, lost everything that I had gained and was right back to total paralysis. I spoke funny, I hopped like that, and I had my arms up around my neck, and kind of like just like I was not able to stop wearing that. So I spoke funny, like I was really drunk. Anyway, but I told my wife on my second day that I was at home that I had something weird was going on with me, and I needed to find out what it was. And she called the hospital, and they realized I was relapsing from steroid withdrawal from 500 cc's, had been that way for over a day, to no steroids at all overnight, and they were panicked. The ambulance rushed me to the hospital, and I was back worse than when I came. Later, the doctor admitted that they had no idea if I would even live through it, because such a thing had never happened before to anyone that they knew of. They were really concerned. It was a major setback for me. I most likely would have recovered, maybe in time to buy the Delaware business. The Christian lady could not handle all the intrigue going on at her house, so Allison had to take her baby and go. Allison never told me anything about her troubles. She just figured I had enough troubles of my own, evidently. So for a long time while I was in the hospital, I thought she was still living there with the Christian lady. After 6 months or so, I was again starting to get better. I can move some of my arms a little. I can move my legs a little. I had gotten down to about 250 cc's of steroids, somewhere between 250 and 300 cc's of steroids. We were changing to pills at that point in time, and I was able again to use the fork. Like, I could take the fork and hold it in my hand and put it up to my mouth with mashed potatoes. I weighed about 90 pounds, and you can see some pictures of me. I was 90 pounds soaking wet, and I was improving. Then that night, the nurse came in to pass out medications, and my turn did not have any steroids in it. None. I tried to object, but she was busy and couldn't understand me and just walked out. Well, if you're paralyzed, there's not much you can do about that. You just can sort of like watch her walk out as you're screaming. But they're going, shut up, shut up. In the VA, you got fed cold breakfast. If somebody had to feed you, you got fed cold breakfast just before lunch came, and cold lunch just before supper came. It was not a really good place to be, and they were not strong on service in the VA, I can tell you for sure. I would lay sometimes in my feces most nights until the morning crew finally came in and scraped everything off my bottom the next day. And here we were, back in the same situation, but I'm not at home. I'm in a hospital. I'm supposed to be taken care of by VA nurses that are so overworked and so understaffed that you're lucky if they even give you your medications. And I have no prescription for steroids. None. This is on Friday night, knowing that the doctor is gone until Monday. So ain't nobody going to be given any prescriptions until Monday. And the last time they were terrified because I went overnight without the steroids. I'm going to have to go Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night without any steroids. I'm believing that probably that's it. What in the world was all this prophecy about and all these things about making these amazing technologies would upset the whole entire world? Anyway, after relapsing on steroids once, that was terrifying. I would not see a nurse again until morning. That I knew for sure. A few hours later came, and the shocks running through my body were horrendous. All night and all day the next day, I could not talk or do anything. I just kept going over and over through my brain the same mantra. I just put myself into kind of like a trance, and I just kept doing the same mantra over and over and over again, because I knew what I was trying to do was impossible and that I couldn't live through this, but it just kept going in my brain, I will not die. I refuse to die. I have a mission with my God, and Satan cannot take me. It ran over and over and over like a continuous tape recording all weekend long. I could hear what anyone said. I could not hear what anyone said or did. They just come in, and since I was totally non-responsive, but I still had a pulse, they didn't deal with me. That was the VA hospital in those days. Well, he's still alive, but for some reason he doesn't want to eat anything, and he's just being a jerk. Okay, leave him alone. Finally, Monday morning rolled around, and the doctor was making his rounds. I didn't know it. I wasn't really aware of anything. But he was making his rounds with his intern. And I don't know why, but I felt his hand on my hand. I have no idea how I felt that. And I heard him exclaim, "Oh, my God!" The man was a flurry of activity. He ran, rushed, and got an IV and put that back in my arm and filled it with steroids. It took a couple of days for me to come out of it, but I was back. For a little while, I had hot meals again. They were kind of taking pretty good care of me for the first time at the VA hospital. I tried to ask the doctor if I would recover, and he just told me that he had no idea. He said they were all trying to figure out why I hadn't died. It was a big question mark. Why the hell did that not kill him? I know why I hadn't died, and once again, I forgave them, second time, and we went forward. About a month later into this process, it happened again. Now, this is VA hospital back when I was a young man, and this is the way it was. It happened again, and it was in the evening when the nurse didn't bring the pills, only I'm definitely looking for those pills every single night. I told that nurse, I must have scared her. I tried to be as intimidating as I could. I told her, bring your head down, talk to me. Look me in the eyes. Now, look me right straight dead in the eyes. She's looking me in the eye. I told her, I said, look into my eyes. And I told her, I laid it on her, I said, this is not going to happen to me again. I'm telling you now, listen to me. Don't look away. Listen. I'm telling you right now, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to murder you. I will kill you no matter what it takes. Somehow, I will survive this. And when I survive this, I will kill you. Do what I tell you to do. Don't walk away. Don't leave this room. Do what I tell you to do. And I told her that if she didn't do what I did, she was done. I said, go get that portable phone on wheels, because they had this little portable phone on wheels that they would haul around for, you know, people who were crippled or people who were handicapped, and so they could bring a phone to you if you couldn't get up and walk. And she wheeled that phone over to me, and I had her dial my wife's phone number, and I told my wife, it's happening again. And for her to come and get me and to take me home with all the pills that I needed to get down from this and to hurry and call the doctor immediately to the hospital and have them get me some damn steroids now. I was barking orders. So anyway, to get me all the pills and then get here, come here, whatever you have to do to get here, go ask Bobby or anybody that we know to drive you here, and get me out of here. And make sure they give you every pill that you need to take me all the way down from where I am now to no more steroids. So she did that. She came to the hospital and she signed me out, with that doctor objecting to me signing out of the hospital, with his comment that if I checked out, I would very possibly die. I looked at him and I said, do you know how funny you sound to me right now? I mean, if I stay here, I'm going to die. Anyway, I guess it was kind of funny, but it really wasn't very funny. And I said, I have a far better chance if you just put me outside the hospital, out on the front doorstep. I'll be better off than being in here. So I figured I'd have a lot better chance at home with Allison reducing my dose there, because I know I can depend on that woman. She's the best woman that God ever put on the earth. And present company accepted. I'm sure that somebody feels that about a lot of other people, but she is, in my opinion, she is the top of the line. And I trust that woman any day with my life. So I discovered that my wife and child had been nomads. I didn't even know. And had been helped by a church, because the church lady had asked them to leave. There was just too much intrigue and too much going on, and coming and going, and ambulances. It was, and I don't blame her. But she just asked Allison if she could go. And knowing Allison, Allison didn't put up any fight. She just said, sure, honey, of course. I can find another way, even though neither one of us had any relatives anywhere in the area, anywhere in the state, anywhere in this side of the country. So anyway, she had been being helped by a church that let her and our baby live in an attic. And she had sought welfare, and we were staying in a hotel room with a baby crib. And we were almost broke. So, I mean, it was miserable for my wife. Imagine, one room, hotel room, I'm laying on the bed. I'm about 90 pounds or 80 pounds soaking wet. You got a baby screaming and crying in a baby crib, and you're all alone in this place, and you're having to handle me and handle the baby, and you got no money, and you're trying to take what little you got and actually feed everybody. I witnessed so many miracles in that hotel room in the time that I was there. It's like maybe someday I'll just do a podcast just on what happened there. Anyway, that's where the ambulance unloaded my body, was there into that hotel room. I looked like a Jewish inmate from Dachau, Germany. But I was happy being with my ladies. That was the happiest I had been since it started. These are all long stories, but God is in the miracle business. And there are a lot of stories of how we survived. And a lady who actually visited to give me therapy, because when they brought me back to the hotel room, then somebody had to try to work out some therapy for me. And I wasn't in the hospital, wasn't going to be in the hospital. The hospital was standing there with, oh, my God, we almost killed a guy twice. And we're all wondering how he lived through it. And so they had to do something for me. So a lady came to give me therapy. And she saw us. And she ultimately saw when she went to there's a little refrigerator there. There was no food in that place. No food. We were down to one hot dog. One hot dog. Allison came to me and she said, well, we got one hot dog left. And I said, well, if you don't mind, you can cook that for me. And I'll take the hot dog because the baby can't eat it anyway. And basically, I guess we got some praying to do, girl. And we did a bunch of praying. We were storming heaven. Here this lady comes to do therapy for me. And she winds up, for some reason, going to that refrigerator and sees there's nothing there. So she leaves after the therapy, and then about an hour and a half later, we hear a knock on the door. And she's there with three bags of groceries. She's like, man, no, honey, we're putting some food in this house, in this place. Things like that happen with us all the time, all the time. So anyway, they got me into the Princeton Hospital from that hotel room. So they came and got me and put me in a hospital in Princeton. And for a few months, I mean, if you can imagine an expensive hospital like this, I got no money. VA is no place for me anymore. And eventually I was moved to a rehabilitation center. My wife got set up through a church group just up the street from where the rehabilitation center was. What were the odds of that? Now we were talking. I mean, she's set up. I'm going to a rehabilitation center. Now in the hospital, while I was in the hospital, I got a visit one night. My doctor came to see me at 3:00 in the morning. At Princeton Hospital. She came by at that hour to tell me that she couldn't sleep, that she hadn't been able to sleep, and she'd been trying to decide what to do. She said she'd reviewed my case and knew that we were broke as a joke and had finally decided that if I wanted to sue the doctor at the VA hospital, she had commiserated over this decision, but she would testify that it is a miracle that he didn't kill me. She was so sincere, and she was so concerned, and she was crying. And I told her, I said, don't worry. You don't have to worry about it because I have no intentions of suing anyone, least of all some black doctor who God only knows what it may have taken him to get his education. I'm not going to sue him. I mean, this, everything that happens to me, honey, I told her, everything that happens to me, that's God. That's the will of God. I'm in God's hands. Nobody's going to do anything to me unless God allows it to happen. And the last thing in the world I want to do is sue anybody. So she left pretty relieved because she'd been commiserating over the decision. You meet people who are real jerks, and you meet some of the most beautiful people in the world whenever you're walking in these situations. Anyway, Princeton Hospital was very, very kind to me. I'll never forget their kindness. The dietitian at Princeton Hospital told me, she says, I'm going to fatten you up, boy. And I really ate good, and every meal I had was a hot meal there. Anyway, in the rehab facility that they moved me to, I had it all. I had it all. I mean, I recovered somewhat as I was in the Princeton Hospital, and I got off my steroids, and eventually I lost the double vision. So evidently my cranial nerves might have been coming back, although to this day I have no balance, none. I cannot balance. I balance by sight. I have no equilibrium. I don't have that. Turn the lights out and I'm on the floor and I have no idea where up is. I don't know if I'm upside down or right side up. I have no idea. So I just learned that if I could even get a little bit of light, I can balance. I can figure out where I'm at and I can stay upright. So anyway, in the rehab facility, I had it all. I got therapy in the facility, and I got to see people walking and people improving because I was in therapy in rooms where there were other people taking therapy. And so I wasn't as alone as just laying in a hospital bed somewhere. And I got to see people walking and improving all around me. I was in awe of people who could walk. I remember just laying there in that perpendicular position all the time and just like, wow, what it must be like to walk again. I kept trying to remember what it was like to walk. If you're down for a long time and you come back, you actually have to learn how to walk again. Believe it or not, you have to learn it again all over. The psychiatrist and the rehab executive staff, administrator of that research of that facility, called for me to be brought in for a meeting, and they asked for my wife to attend. They were concerned that I was in denial. They made it clear that I should not even be alive. And that's the opinion of everybody that reviewed my case. But it was just more than they could bear to see me be so jovial. I was having a good time. From where I came from, you can understand, I was having a pretty good time. I was finally in a wheelchair, so I'd gotten and improved enough that I was actually in a wheelchair. I still was like, maybe 120 pounds, but I mean, and normally I was 180, but, you know, I was in a wheelchair and I could even wheel myself around. I had worked it to where without my fingers I could actually move that wheel, and I could even wheel myself around. I was making jokes all the time and yucking it up. And they could not understand why I was so cheerful. They wanted me to understand that I would most likely never walk or even write a letter again for the rest of my life. Now I'm like 30 years old here. And it's like they just wanted me to understand that. I have to deal with that. I have to come to grips with that. I have to accept that. I have to now kind of like adjust and adapt myself to that to that reality. I'm like, really? Anyway, I never even write a letter again. I talked a little bit better by then. I was a little more understandable. And I told them that my heart beat and my lungs breathed because God willed it so, not because an anatomical reaction from certain cranial nerves had caused it to happen. My God had my heart beat. My God had my lungs move. They used to, whenever I was in the hospital, they'd take these new neurologists, students, and they'd have them come in and go around my bed and stick pins and electronic gizmos and run shocks and electric signals through my nerves and my body. And the idea was they were supposed to diagnose what was wrong with me. And usually if they were willing to give me a Coca-Cola, if they'd go get me a Coca-Cola, then give me a Coca-Cola and I'll tell you the answer. I'd give them the answer if they'd get me a Coke. So I got a lot of Cokes out of that. But anyway, the answer was, and I say, here's the answer. The answer is, there is no signal going from my so-and-so cranial nerves. I can't remember what all the third, sixth, seventh cranial nerves, I remember. Going from my cranial nerves to tell my heart to beat, but it's beating anyway. And there is nothing going from to tell my lungs to breathe, but they're breathing anyway. And we don't understand it because we've diagnosed it and there isn't any reason why that's going on. That was the answer. So now when you've had that, doesn't that pretty much, I mean, you've had the kind of prophecy and the stuff that's happening for you to be told that you're going to do all these amazing things in the world. You're coming back for it to all happen, and now all of a sudden you're down here, and you should have died, and you would have died, and everybody else in your place did die, but you're not dying, and you're staying alive, and the doctor's still trying to kill you, even though the polio can't kill you. He's still trying to kill you, and you still don't die. By the time you make it back to this rehabilitation facility, you kind of feel like you maybe died and went to heaven, because this is a whole lot better than it all was before. You were unhappy to find out your wife was in that terrible situation, but you're finding now that she's getting some help from a Christian group, and she's going to be okay too. And you got a chance to come out of this thing, and now you're even setting up in a wheelchair. And somebody's trying to tell you that you're supposed to be morose. Anyway. So, anyway, God willed it to happen. And my wife loved me as much as when I was athletic. You know, I mean, I'm paralyzed, and she's still just as beautiful and wonderfully in love with me, and I'm still as in love with her. What am I supposed to be morose about? I see people all around me who will never walk again, and they really will never walk again, and maybe they could walk again if they had God with them the way God is with me, but I know He loves everybody, but the reality is they probably aren't going to walk again. And I try to cheer them up. I try to lift them up. I try to get them to give them something to take their mind off of what they're doing. And I'm just being in denial. I am so thankful that I have a God who will take me into all things His prophets have predicted for my life. And they think I am in denial. I looked them dead in the eyes and I said, "You guys will be in denial when I walk out of here." Like, you're going to be in denial when I walk out of here. And by the way, they were. A few days later, it started happening. The breakthrough. The beginning of my new beginning. I felt a sharp pain in my foot. It was like, wow, man, it was like that kind of pain. I was alone in bed, no one around. I just felt that sharp pain in my foot. It hurt a lot. A lot. And I started to cry out with it, and then I started laughing. I'm like, oh, my God. Wow. Wow, that's pain. What a beautiful thing. It's pain. I haven't felt pain in over a year, almost 2 years. This is great. So I never knew pain could feel so good. Anyway, it moved up my leg, and within a matter of a month or two, I used to just lay in bed and practice that, just be, because I got to where I could move of my finger, I could move my toe, I could move my foot. You know, I just kept working on it and thinking at it and concentrating on it, and I'd be able to move my foot. I keep trying like heck to move it enough that I could put it off the bed. I wanted my foot to go off the bed. Maybe if it would go off the bed, then, you know, that I could get up. I don't know. It's kind of like one of those things of, if you want something to happen, you just got to keep concentrating on getting it to start to happen. And then if you believe enough to get it to start to happen, maybe it'll really happen. So I just lay there at night concentrating on trying to move my foot in some position. I used to have them at night when I was in the rehabilitation center. I'd have them put my little food stand, the little food stand that goes over your bed that you can set up and you can eat. With that little food stand to hold your food on wheels. I'd have them put over there, and I keep trying to get to where I could move my arms because I thought maybe if I could get my arms on top of that and I could get my foot to go off the bed, I might be able to lean over that and walk. I found myself within a matter of months, 2 months, I found myself on parallel bars in an upright position. That's the first time since my baby was born and I held the baby and the next day I was paralyzed. That is the very first time I had been in an upright position. Other than a few times they'll take you up, just to keep your blood circulating on a Stryker frame. They'll move you up to where you can kind of get used to having your blood go in the right direction. Because if you stand up, you'll pass out. From laying down for a long time, you stand up, you'll pass out. Why? Because the blood is flowing in a different way. And then whenever you have to stand up, the blood has to get accustomed to flowing in a different way. So anyway, I found myself on parallel bars in an upright position. Takes a while to do that without passing out, but I got there. I got a message from the guy in Delaware. Here I am now for the first time standing upright on the parallel bars, and now I'm hearing from the guy in Delaware. What are the odds of all of this? The guy who had the company that I wasn't able to buy because I was paralyzed. And they said that he had a stroke, a heart attack. And he was at the position he couldn't run the company anymore. He needed to sell the company. He needed, if I was going to do it, this was it. It was time. So he gave me only a few months to come and do my thing. Now here I am, kind of walking on parallel bars. I'm in an upright position and I'm doing okay. And only a few months to come and do my thing. I was able to walk with a walker, one of those little walker devices. I was able to walk with that. And I told myself I'd be there, and I had sent a message back to him, I'll be there. I'll be there. I may not look as good as I did last time you saw me, but I'll be there. So I checked myself out of the rehab facility. Got my wife to come and get me, and I checked myself out of the rehab facility and went home to a tiny little apartment down the street where my wife and baby were living. and I once again joined my ladies, where I got to see my daughter celebrate her second birthday with her very own cream puff. One of the funniest things I've ever seen. It had been a very, very tough educational 2 years. And I was ready to take the journey. And I knew full well who God was and who He is, and that He would never leave me or forsake me. See, I came back from Israel in faith, feeling like, okay, I believe you, God, having had God do all these things to make me feel like, yeah, you're special. Yeah, you're going to do something good and something special. Yeah, I'm with you. But I hadn't really seen what I'm with you means. Like I had just seen what I'm with you means over the last 2 year period of time. I knew what I'm with you really meant. I knew what faith really meant. I learned patience, and I learned to wait for my Lord. I knew I had a big project in front of me, and I knew that I was going to do it. I knew that I would never shrink away from hardships or difficulty, and that I had a strong faith in my Lord. With that behind me, I was ready for that which was ahead of me. I walked out of that facility with a walker, but I did walk out. I may have been on a walker, but I did walk out of that facility. I went home to that little place, that little bitty place that my wife was in, just one or two rooms. Everything was kind of moved all together. But she'd put it together in a way that she had all the things that she needed. She had actually gone out and gotten welfare from the government, a thing that I thought I would never see her do, and I never have seen her do before that or since. But it was kind of funny. I'll just tell you that real quick, and I'll get back to the story. Kind of funny because she took welfare from the government for, I think, a month or two. And then when we got on our feet and we got things together and we started making an income, the first thing my wife did was go down to welfare. And she went to welfare and she said, I want to stop my welfare, but I want to stop the welfare and I want to pay it all back. I wonder how many times they've had somebody come in that's been on welfare for a while that says, I want to pay it back. That's my wife. That is my wife. That's who that beautiful person is. She's like, I needed it. Thank God you were there. Really appreciate you helping me. But now I don't need it, and I want to give it back. I want to put it back in now because I don't need it now. But I really, really, really thank you and appreciate you having given it to me. How do I give it back to you? Nobody there could answer her question. They had no idea. They're like, you want to what? Lady, just take it. It's fine. Just go ahead and take it. Go. We're glad we helped you. It's fine. You don't owe us anything. She said, no. It's not a matter of owing anything. It's a matter of you gave it to me. I needed it. Now somebody else needs it, and I want to give it back to you. So they had to actually take her to the director of the welfare department, to the director himself, the director explained how she could give it back. And he told her how to do it, and she gave the money back the way that she was supposed to do it and left. That's the woman that I married. That's the beautiful girl that God just reached down out of all the women in the world. He said, you know something? This one's for you. Well, he was absolutely right. I have never, ever, ever in my lifetime had a hard time staying loyal to that person. Not one single solitary time have I ever had an interest in going anywhere other than back into her arms. Anyway, So we walked out of the facility. We're finally on our way to Delaware. Yay, Delaware. That's a pretty interesting thing because they're already set up in an energy insulation company with trucks and warehouse and reputation and equipment awaiting to conserve. Costs of owning the newest systems of energy reduction are virtually eliminated concept to begin the promised prophetic journey. Pretty interesting. In a walker or a wheelchair, depending. I went down to Delaware. I would possibly change the name of the company eventually to UCSA because, I mean, I think, God, this is the provision that you were talking about on Mount Moses. You're delivering this position to me. Who gives somebody a business that's a going concern that has trucks and all the equipment with no money down and just pay me out of the proceeds of what you do with the business? Who does that? Who does that? How do you get anyone that can do that with you? Anyway, so I was on my way, and I figured I'd change the name to UCSA when the final payment was made to buy the company, and then that'd be it. So I was thinking, is this our investor? Who knows when God speaks how he is going to do, and what he says, how will it unfold, or within what time frame it will happen? See, we all have to remember, God is timeless. We may want to see something in our time frame. God has his own time frame. God can say this is going to happen, and you can say, wow, that's happening next week because it has to happen next week. It may happen next year because it really didn't have to happen next week. You just thought it had to happen next week. It's going to happen when is the right time for it to happen, and you may not even know what he's thinking about. When he says something, you're seeing it from your reference, from your frame of reference. So we don't know what, but all I know is God is timeless, and I just know that it will happen. If God says it will happen, it will happen. Anyway, Delaware was ready, and even though I walked in a walker or sometimes a wheelchair, I sold commercial insulation and built that business up and installed my marketing concept, and I did mall shows, went down and rent a whole mall to come in and do a mall show throughout the entire mall, shopping mall, small shopping malls, not big ones, but mall shows, to get leads as the guy in the white tuxedo in a wheelchair. That was me. The guy getting wheeled through the mall in a wheelchair in a white tuxedo. That was the guy who's running this mall show. Anyway, after 2 years and a second miraculous, painless child who was born, who we also called Jonathan, the guy, but who we wound up having to change the name from Jonathan again because the second one was a girl. So the prophet got it right and got it wrong. Going to have a boy and two girls. We had two girls and a boy. Not a boy and two girls. But, see, you can't second guess any of these things. You don't know how they saw it. Anyway, the guy who had sold me his company after this 2 year period wound up taking it back from me. He just came in and commandeered it. And I don't know if that's what he had in mind all along, but he didn't do it for non-payment because I had never missed a payment. But his lawyer had put a clause in the contract that gave him the right after 2 years to just come and take it back. And I didn't have any money for a lawyer, and I didn't have a lawyer review the contract. But ultimately, it was one of the most little innocuous clauses because it related to a glitch in the law, an old thing, an old glitch in the law. And that's why I think that maybe he had that in his mind all along. Hey, this guy looks talented, capable of getting something done. I'm tired and I'm old. Let me just come and pick on him, get all the best that he can give me and over a 2 year period of time and get my company back and let him improve it. I certainly did improve it. Anyway, I have never, ever, ever had anybody come in, take anything from me that they got anything out of, so I don't think he probably really made much out of the deal. But, okay, and I've never looked back, and I've never been the kind of guy to go out and get revenge or sue somebody or anything. Hey, nobody can do anything to me unless God lets them do it. So, okay, he got his company back. I kind of walked away. I walked away still in a walker. But maybe that had been his way of taking my marketing ideas. I don't know. I don't even care. It got me on my feet, it motivated me, and it got me on the road. All I know is that was not the provision. That wasn't it. That's not going to be UCS of A. That's not the thing that God was talking about on Mount Moses. So we haven't arrived to that place yet. I was looking for a job as an invalid. I sold a medical MedAlert. If you've heard about MedAlert, I sold those medical devices, that MedAlert device, for the elderly for commissions in a walker. And the small business, there's a Christian businessman, small businessman, that hired me, gave me an old ambulance to drive. That's all he had. I said, "Don't have a car." He said, "I can provide a vehicle." And he gave me an old ambulance. It was like, you know, an old junky, beat-up ambulance that just barely choked along and threw smoke out all over the place over the exhaust. Anyway, I would pull up in that old ambulance and walk up to the door in my walker, and those elderly customers could really relate to me. They could relate to me. I did very well. And well enough to give away one unit to someone who couldn't afford to have one out of every 10 units that I sold. So I just made a deal with myself. I just said, "Lord, I'm going to sell 10 of them, and I'm going to give one of them away. I'll take the commission from selling the 10. I'll buy one for somebody that can't afford it," because I was constantly running into people that they wanted it, they needed it, they could fall, not get up, and they really did need the help that it could provide to them or have an emergency, but they just couldn't afford it. One lady had no arms and no legs. No arms and no legs. We got our little girl to actually learn about God by having her come with us down to give that lady her free MedAlert. And all the money it would take to run the MedAlert, I paid it for a whole year in advance. And we came to give it to her, and she fell in love with our little girl. We wanted to have our little girl be involved in this charitable thing. And she fell in love with our little baby girl, and we said, "Oh, heck with it, let's go." We put her in her wheelchair, put her in our car, took her down to the mall, or took her down to the food store, and we went shopping and got some stuff for her while our little girl was on her lap in one of those little carts. And she was in heaven. She was in heaven. This little, I mean, they love little kids anyway. This little girl, she was a black lady. And she just didn't have any family or anything. And we just kind of loved on her for that day. It was such a beautiful relationship to have to give to our child. that she could learn about those things too. Kids just loved our kid, our little girl. She was beautiful. Is still. Anyway, I interviewed for a job with an energy company that had a heat pump that was a very unique heat pump that would heat up swimming pools. So it was a heat pump to heat swimming pools. And those commissions would be a whole lot better than the metallurg commissions. I mean, I'd be selling a big ticket item, you know, $10,000 item, and get a reasonable commission out of that. I loved the product. It was a heat pump that they said had an operating efficiency, COP, coefficient of performance, of 2-to-1. Well, I guess most heat pumps do 2-to-1, but actually it was doing 2-to-1 heating these swimming pools, and it, because the swimming pool with water in the swimming pool was cooling it down in a more efficient manner than air might have done that, and we can get into some of that later on, then actually because of all of that, that product was, it was more efficient than a usual pool heater would have been. So I sold a few of them, and then I messaged quite a few of them, and then I delivered that owner. I discovered that the owner of our company was a distributor for the product. So it wasn't his product, he was a distributor for that product, and he was looking for a partner. Well, I got an idea in my spirit. I took my commissions and I rented out the Hotel DuPont in Delaware, banquet hall in Brandywine. I mean, this is a posh, one of the most posh places in all of Delaware, Hotel DuPont in Brandywine, their banquet hall that holds hundreds of people with a very exclusive cuisine at the Gold Ballroom. Well, there are people in Delaware that would give anything to be in the Gold Ballroom at one of their banquets, because it's like, it's amazing. And I rented that room out for a 7-course meal for anybody that wanted to come on me. 7-course meal. That was very, very, very expensive. It cost every dime I had, and some more that I did not have, but I had to come up with a deposit for the down payment, and then they'll let you pay them in check whenever you leave. Anyway, I invited the public to come to a presentation and a dinner, exclusive gourmet dinner on me. They just had to be homeowners in the area. So if they're a homeowner, Mr. and Mrs., come on out, have a nice dinner on me. We're going to do a little presentation, and you'll have fun. And if you have a house, you're going to enjoy this anyway, because everybody wanted to go to the Gold Ballroom for a swank gourmet meal. It's not going to cost them a dime, 7-course meal. I was going to show off a solar heat pump. So I coined the name solar heat pump then, because it's a heat pump and it's working on energy that it takes from these panels that are on a roof, so it's a solar heat pump. It's going to show off a solar heat pump that could heat their home. They hadn't been doing that, but why couldn't they do that? Well, actually, I found out they had been doing that, but that wasn't what this guy was selling. He was just selling swimming pool units, but I said could heat their home and their swimming pool, and I was going to give one heat pump unit away to somebody who attended the meeting. So come down, have a full 7-course meal at the number one place for banquets in the entire state of Delaware, and be my guest. And you might win a unit to put on your house that would cost you $10,000. I packed that room. I invited what was my boss, the guy who was the distributor, who's my boss, he was my boss, who after that night became my partner, to that meeting in Delaware, to that big ball, and to the meeting that I did up on a stage. I made a deal with him that night when he was there and he had seen all of this going on. He was excited that he would provide all the heat pump units and I would provide the sales. We made about $300,000 out of that $15,000 dinner that night. And I was in my own business called United Community Services of America, marketing partner to this program, and he was the supplier of the heat pump units and the installer of the heat pump units. So I was a partner with him. No longer was he my boss. I owned UCSA that marketed exclusively for Colt Car Industries. That was his thing. That supplied the technology and the installations. Now we'll get into that and get into that a little bit more, maybe even on the next one, because that is definitely technology. Because what happened with that little heat pump and what I did with that heat pump and what I took that into, that was amazing. But by the way, if you did listen to, I think the first podcast where I explained my name change, and I also explained my little time in prison and the things that happened involving a heat pump, that's the heat pump we're talking about right there. So I'm going to tell you next time all about that heat pump and how we devised that heat pump and how that became the most efficient heat pump in the history of heat pumps. And it's something far better than anything Carrier, Train, Borg Warner, or any of the people in the heat pump industry have ever produced. And that wasn't what we started out with. We just started out with something to heat in swimming pools, and it is a heat pump, but I'll tell you how that all happened and how that all came about. So anyway, that's something maybe that we can look forward to the next one, but it's going to be less about God and far more about technology the next one. And then we're going to start getting into some mind-boggling technologies as we go along. So I appreciate your patience with me, but I want to give you the background of exactly who we had become when we got into fulfilling the prophecies and the technologies that God obviously had in front of us. So thank you for listening to this podcast, and we'll get on to the next podcast next week. I'll deliver that one. Okay, have a great day, have a wonderful time, and thank you for listening to me.